From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for June 11th, 2021. Hey, your first place Milwaukee Brewers are home this weekend with the Pirates, and the Bucks are at the Forum this weekend looking to tie the series with Brooklyn. Let's start off with naked people. Okay, now that I have your attention, it's almost time for the Philadelphia Naked Bike Ride. That's right, you ride through the streets of Philadelphia bare buck naked. Well, almost naked. You still need to wear a mask. And because of the mask requirement and the supposed anonymity, they're expecting a huge turnout. And if you've ever been to Philly, you know this is not going to be pretty. A young woman stole a Cadillac and led state troopers on a high-speed chase that reached 112 miles an hour. When they finally stopped her, she jumped out of the car, and she was completely naked and high on meth. Yep, just another day in Florida. A Michigan man bought lottery tickets at his neighborhood gas station and won the $1 million jackpot. He was so excited, he drove off with the gas hose still attached, resulting in damage to his car, damage to the pump, and it started a small fire. Fortunately, his $1 million jackpot will cover the damages. And in Cambodia, they use giant African rats for detecting landmines and explosives. So how big are these rats? Well, they can weigh up to 10 pounds and be 30 inches long. The most successful of these rodents, Magba is his name, is being retired after 5 years. He's getting a nice 401k and a new job as an emotional support rat. Okay, I just made up that part. And finally, our headline of the week. Statistics show that teen pregnancy drops off significantly after age 25. Seriously? On the podcast today, we have Dave Sandstrom, Chris Evers, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thank you, Max. Mixed week overall for markets. The NASDAQ up 1.8% this week. The S&P 500 up 0.4%, closing today at 42.47. But the Dow Jones Industrial Average finished down 0.8% this week, despite rallying to end the day Friday, up 14 points for the day. For the year, the Dow Jones now up 13.6%. The S&P taking the lead, up 13.8%. And the NASDAQ up 9.5% for the year. Importantly, the benchmark 10-year U.S. Treasury moved down from 1.56, where it began the week, to close at 1.46% at the end of the week. Maybe in contrast to some of the news, Joel, that we got on CPI this week, the headline number obviously significant, higher than expected, and I think most importantly, maybe well within the range of where, you know, the broader range of where expectations have been for inflation.
Yeah, hi. but it was higher than expected even. I mean, what the average consensus expectation was. We had 5% year-to-year inflation for the Consumer Price Index, which is the broadest measure of inflation that we have. That was the highest it's been since 2008. If you take out the noisy, volatile numbers of food and energy prices, it was up 3.8%. That's higher than it's been since 1992. So it's been a long time, you know, getting there. But also the 63-year average is 3.6%. So it's the first time above that since 1992, which shows you, you know, how low inflation has been. But there were some one-offs in there that kind of help explain why it's up and maybe it won't be up for very long.
I think those one-offs may be some of the more interesting points always as we look at the data. One of the things I joked about in preparing for the show was the idea that weekends were about to get more expensive with the price of bacon up 13% year over year, the price of whiskey up 3.5% year over year. And I think what I end up doing most weekends is laundry, and the price of laundry equipment was up north of 25% on a year over year basis. And so I think all kinds of noise in that data. There's so many different things that get measured in that basket. The big one, obviously, though, Joel, used car prices.
Car rentals went up 110% from a year ago. You know, and the point of saying a year ago is a big deal. They call it a base effect. Because remember, a year ago, you know, nobody was renting cars. So prices were really low. A year ago, nobody was buying washers and dryers, I guess. So here's a couple of numbers that I got out of that. Men's pants, 12.5% inflation in the last year. Okay, so, you know, we're starting to go back to work. We're starting to, you know, here we are at the office, and we're all wearing pants here. Women's dresses, the prices for those are up 16.5% in the last year. So, there are some. Airfares was another one. You know, airfares went up 7% just in May, and they were up 10% in April. But year to year, they're up 24%. And you can sort of see then why those would be up that far and why those might not be up for a while. We were talking before the podcast about vaccinations, the shingles vaccination and how it hurts. And I'm sort of seeing inflation like that. That it's like, you know, a needle going in and it hurts, but you're going to be better off in the longer run. But you can also get concerned that that hurt's not going to go away. I mean, and that's kind of, I think, what's happening is people are like, well, what if it keeps hurting? What if inflation stays high for a while?
Yeah, Joel, and I think it's important, too, to realize that it isn't just a simple switch that it's one or the other from a transitory versus long-term standpoint, right? I mean, there's different things that are being affected right now. And when you have, you know, certain supply chain disruptions like computer chips and lumber, you know, those things are very highly likely going to be transitory, right? But some of the other things like wage increases, the housing market, those are some prices that can stick around for a little while, right? So I think it's important to not just view this as it's either all going to disappear or it's all going to be here forever. Obviously, there's different areas that where prices are affected that are going to react quite differently.
I think the wages one is one that's going to be very interesting to watch. And it's also going to be interesting, the Federal Reserve Board, their policymaking committee meets next week, right? So it'll be interesting to see what they say about inflation and then, I guess, how the markets respond to that.
Well, I think, you know, we could spend all day looking at the individual components of CPI, and there's a lot of really interesting stuff in there, and I think you can tell a lot of really good stories. But the wage piece is the one where if you follow it through to the logical conclusion, right, that the vast majority of people who are seeing wage increases are coming at the lower end of the earning spectrum. I've seen a number of reports talking about how it's going to be a great summer for teenage workers. Those that maybe are just looking for a summer job are going to have plenty of opportunities to make far more than they had before. Those tend to be the individuals that spend that money. And so you get velocity, which is this idea that the money doesn't just sit anymore, it's making its way through the system. And I think there is a benefit potentially to the economy and not just seeing inflation, but also seeing the economic growth that accompanies that would be, I think, a pretty big thing as opposed to just seeing inflation where the economic growth kind of stagnates, but you know, you see prices because of supply issues or you know, imbalances in supply and demand. And so I think the other thing that we talk about, and Chris, this is something that you pointed out before the show today, is kind of this expectation that inflation is going to be high for a while. And so there isn't as much maybe risk to those headline numbers right now as there would be if the expectation was 1.5% like it had been for a decade, and all of a sudden you print 5. Well, 5 is a huge number unless your expectation is 4.7. 5 is not quite such a big deal anymore.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier, and, you know, is that 5% a big number if it's a one-year, 12-month rolling period that this happens for, right? If we're looking back 12 months and inflation's up 5% from that low base effect that Joel mentioned before, and, you know, maybe if we turn the page forward 6 months from now and it's 5% again on another rolling 12 months, okay, it starts to add up. But to your point of, let's look at what the market did this week when this high inflation reading came out. You know, I think most of investors, if you would have asked, hey, we're going to have a higher than expected inflation reading this week, the market's obviously been focused on inflation quite a bit over the last 3 to 6 months. What do you think the market would do? I don't think many people would have said, well, I anticipate that the Treasury rate's probably going to go down and that stocks will go up on the week, broadly speaking. But that's what you saw. So it's important to remember that there's always a second order level of effects of things. It's maybe not always the case of, well, what you initially think is going to happen is bad news or some level of inflation means market's going to sell off, because you have to think, well, what was the expectation for that news? And where were we within that range? You know, we as investors have been so focused on inflation, I think it's important to remember that we're so focused on it because it's the obvious risk out there. And I say obvious because it's the one thing that we easily measure and we can have our eye on, and it's often ended, you know, bull markets in the past. But in most cases, it's not the obvious thing that ends the market, the bull market. So we focus a lot on it, but it's something that's much easily priced in because we're constantly paying attention to it, looking at these readings every month and addressing them as they come out.
And I think the range of expectations is so wide on inflation right now that it's going to take a lot to surprise people there. And so, as you say, it's probably not the thing that everyone's expecting. It's probably one of those things that no one sees coming. On that front, it seems to have been a fairly calm start to the summer so far. Things have quieted in any number of measures. We look at things like the CBOE Volatility Index or the VIX, which measures implied volatility over the next 30 days. That's fallen to its lowest level since before the pandemic. You look at the spread that people are willing to take for risk in the corporate bond market. That's down to sometimes decade-low levels, depending on what you're looking at. And so I think pretty significant signs that the market at least sees some calm headed our way for a while this summer. And of course, the challenge there is, as you said, that second-order effect, right, is what's the expectation? The expectations that things are going to continue to grow fairly slowly, that we're going to see some inflation prints that are high, certainly 5% is high, but that probably tapers off as we get through the summer. And so, you know, I think we set up for this expectation that, okay, if that's the case, if that's really the baseline, that's not so bad. If anything, that really supports what we've been talking about for stocks. And of course, the challenge is there are risks out there, Chris, as you point out, that maybe we're not seeing right now. That's always the case, the meteors from outer space that we talk about. And I think, you know, that's really the challenge. And so, you know, Dave, I think the big question for investors is, if the outlook is maybe Goldilocks right now, not too hot, not too cold for a while, you know, there's some things we're happy about, there's certainly some things we're afraid about, what's the right place for investors to be?
Well, you know, as it happens, anytime we get to market highs and records, right, it's, you know, assess your cash situation, you know, assess your allocations. Are you out of balance? Are you in balance? You know, it's always a good idea in my mind to, if you have expenditures coming up and you're in a nice profit situation with growth, is to take some of that profit, right? I mean, we never feel bad about selling a stock when it's way up, right, as opposed to the opposite. So I would look for that. So, you know, maybe a time for caution, but to your point, Kyle, there are some things out there that would point to some opportunities as we continue forward here. And I think one of the things I like to see is the broader participation in the market. You know, a year ago or 2 years ago, if you would have told me that, you know, Apple's negative and Amazon is flat and Netflix is flat for the year, you know, what do you think of markets? I'd say, well, boy, we must be getting beat up because those guys have been so responsible for advances. So to see those companies, you know, pretty much flat as a group this year, but yet markets are doing quite well in a lot of areas, points to the fact that there's other companies out there now that are helping drive stock prices, which is encouraging.
Yeah, anecdotally, we have performance reports for many of our clients going out today and just happen to be spot checking a few. And there's one where you look at the number in aggregate and go, okay, there's no way this number is correct. This account should be up way more than it is, just looking at the allocation. But then you look at the holdings and a third of the account is in Apple and you're going, okay, now I understand. The thing that had been doing so well for so long is starting to see some challenges. And Chris, you point out we're seeing some antitrust challenges now with some of these tech names. Certainly, I think that's supportive of some of the rotation that we've seen in markets.
Yeah, just specifically today, on Friday, we saw the House of Representatives come out with four new bills introduced that would put pressure on the big tech companies, namely Amazon and Google, of potentially forcing a spinoff of a breakup of some of their business lines. You know, obviously, it's got a long way to go before this would become law of the land. But it certainly seems like this is a priority from a legislative standpoint over the, you know, the next year or so after, you know, essentially we've gotten past the pandemic and they feel comfortable that the economy is on a strong footing, you know, and we're still waiting an outcome from the trial between Epic and Apple, which is essentially pushing back on the 30% take rate that Apple gets on any transaction that occurs on the App Store, which is a big piece of their bottom line. So these trends change. You know, there's always a business that's getting so large that it grows the attention of legislators. It doesn't necessarily mean that the business is in trouble, but it's something that you should pay attention to. It could impact bottom lines. And it's something that, you know, we obviously pay attention to, as many of these businesses constitute some of the largest businesses out there in the S&P 500.
I think the great thing for balanced investors is that, unlike that account that I was talking about earlier, most of our investors aren't counting on a third of their portfolio being in any one stock. You know, those are certainly the outliers. And so as we talk about some of these issues, yeah, if all you're doing is investing in an index fund that's incredibly heavily allocated in those four or five names, you're missing out on the real benefits of diversification. And you're seeing some of that now as some of these names come under fire, as the technology stocks in particular have been a bit battered this year, and as some of the maybe less desirable areas, some of the more cyclical areas of the market that had been out of favor last year, the year before, all of a sudden have really come to the front. So I think a pretty significant development that continues to happen. It certainly isn't the first we've heard of it today with these potential bills being announced. I think these companies have been in focus for a couple of years now, but it does seem like more and more pressure is being placed there.
And Kyle, is that also a point for having some funds that are managed by active managers, so that they would be looking at things like legislation and lawsuits, and they would know and include that in their sort of fundamental analysis?
I think that's the critical thing about active management, and one of the reasons why I'm so such a proponent of including it in a balanced portfolio, is that they're not strictly focused on market capitalization the way an index is. So remember that most indexes are weighted, the individual positions are weighted based on how big a company is, and typically that's market capitalization. Active managers care about risk. They care about opportunity. And that's not something that's captured when all you do is look at how big a company is. And so I think, you know, that's absolutely the right point to be making, Joel, is that when we look at active management, we're not strictly looking at returns. We're not strictly looking at, you know, what should we allocate to based on how big a company is. It's where are the opportunities. Joel, a few other things this week on the economic front. You know, certainly we keep a close eye on how consumers feel about the world, with consumption being better than 2/3 of our economic output.
Hey, Kyle, we had an early reading from the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey that came out today. And what we're finding there is consumers are concerned about inflation. And in fact, they're so concerned about house prices and car prices in particular, that since it reached the lowest point since 1982, as far as affecting their attitudes to want to buy houses and to buy cars. So there is that aspect of inflation that has an impact on consumer sentiment, and that, you know, affects their spending. That said, the survey also said that there's such a pent-up demand right now to buy things that, for at least a temporary period, we don't know how long that is, consumers are somewhat insensitive to prices, that they're going to, you know, pay more for pants and dresses and car rentals because they want those things, and they've got the money to do it. And, you know, Dave, we've talked about this before. I mean, you know, people have saved a lot of money. The last I looked, I think the Fed reported that there was $4.2 trillion in personal savings, as opposed to $1.2 trillion just before the pandemic. So there's a lot of money sitting there. And people are also feeling more comfortable as the economy emerges from the pandemic.
You know, I think the inflation debate is the one that dominates so many of these conversations, and perhaps rightfully so, given that it's such a critical piece of what our economy has been over the years, right? That periods of high inflation have tended to lead to periods where the Fed has to react, or in many cases overreact, which can take markets down. I think you know, the reality is there's far more going on than that. And, you know, another case with employment, especially recently with, you know, workers being more willing to quit, with a ton of job openings out there. I think, you know, that's a story that while it weighs on inflation, it's got a life of its own as well.
Yeah, so we had numbers this week from the Bureau of Labor Statistics that shows job openings posted by employers. And in, I think the latest number was for April, it was the highest ever. And they've only been taking count of these since 2000, but it was 9.3 million jobs that were posted as open. And that compares to 9.8 million unemployed people that we had in the month of April. So you can see those lines are converging, and so we've got, again, almost as many openings as we have people looking for work. But there's the caveat of not all of those people who are looking for work would fit into those jobs or might not even want those jobs, or, you know, so the matches aren't there. So, you know, we still have, as we alluded to before, we're still going to have a struggle for a bit to get back to a point where employers are happy and workers are happy.
You know, the employment picture and that we've seen over the last even few years has been kind of bizarre when you think about it. I mean, we saw such a, you know, prior to the, you know, the pandemic, you know, when we were pushing sub 4% unemployment and waiting for the inflation bug to hit. And we talk about the Phillips curve all the time, that when unemployment hits a certain level, inflation appears. We didn't see that. Now we see the situation where we have record job openings that we've seen ever on record, and yet we're still north of 6% unemployment. Those two things don't typically go together in the same conversation. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see how this employment picture unwinds the rest of the year, and to find out kind of what are the root causes of why that's not, why people aren't taking those jobs right now.
Right, yeah. Well, I guess it's several factors, and, you know, including workers worried about their health and about caring for their family and being able to pay the bills and in some cases kind of, you know, life changes. There are a lot of people who have retired, you know, after losing their jobs in the pandemic. And so those are openings. So, you know, we're going to see, you know, and part of it is the I don't know how big of a factor it is, but it plays a role is, you know, the government has been giving supplements to people who are getting unemployment insurance, and those are going away in September, and in some states it's going away faster. So maybe we'll see, more of a clearer picture after that.
I think we have an interesting experiment almost playing out live in front of us regarding unemployment benefits. Indeed, a private company just recently posted their findings. You know, as you know, a few states have already ended those extended unemployment benefits early, a few months early. And Indeed has come out with data showing that in those states in which the unemployment benefits ended early, they actually have not seen a change in job searches. So that would lend one to believe, well, maybe the root cause is more so on the need of childcare and concerns over the virus and your own health and safety. Obviously, it's still early to see what the root cause is, but, you know, to Dave's point, what an interesting time in the labor market of trying to suss out what the main drivers are, how much slack there is in the system, and what's keeping the unemployment level high while job openings are at record numbers.
I think the key to all of this, as we look at what it means for markets, what it means for investors, is that we are in the midst of what appears to be a recovery that's on more solid footing than we thought even a few months ago, that there's plenty of runway for growth from here, which should lead to plenty of optimism for stocks. Of course, we use cautious optimism because, you know, Chris, as you pointed out earlier, there's just those things that we can't foresee coming that could slow this down at some point. And so, I'm encouraged, I think, by what we see. I think there's plenty of stuff that we need to keep an eye on. And that's what keeps it interesting for us. That's what gives us something to talk about each week, certainly, and something to make sure that we're focused on. But ultimately, again, I think I'm fairly cautiously optimistic about the path forward. Well, it's a pleasure to be back in the office today doing this podcast for you all. We do enjoy doing the program for you, and we will talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.